Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Monday, May 15th, 2017. I'm your host, Scott Burton. Glad to have you with us as always. On today's show, blues musicians Jeb Rault and Jimmy Sweetwater will preview their Juno shows. Pat Hartman will tell us about the Primula Tour. We'll learn about a theatrical collaboration between Reach and Perseverance Theater. And we'll get a preview of Montessori Borealis' production of Alice in Wonderland. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more right here, live and local on a Juno afternoon. It's currently a beautiful 59 degrees here in the capital city.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The vice chairman of the Crow Nation says the southeastern Montana tribe has been surviving on the revenue it gets from coal mining. Duke Goes Ahead told Vice President Mike Pence the mine provides 85 good-paying jobs and helps pay for services. The vice president met with Crow leadership on Friday during a visit to Montana. Jackie Yamanaka from Yellowstone Public Radio has more.
Montana Senator Steve Daines traveled with the vice president to Billings. He said it's notable the first stop on the agenda was to the Absalica mine on the Crow Reservation.
There's tremendous potential here, and it is a lifeblood right now for the Crow tribe. And without it, they say coal keeps the lights on. I'll say it's lights out for the Crow tribe if we lose these coal jobs here.
Westmoreland Resources mines the coal it leases from the Crow tribe. The downturn in the coal industry has hurt the tribe because it agreed to cut its share of the profits from coal to keep the mining going. Daines, Pence, and U.S. Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke climbed on horses to travel to a hill that overlooks a reclaimed area of the mine. Afterwards, Pence said it was hard to tell that the verdant hills on the Crow Reservation were once mined.
And on behalf of the President of the United States, I'm here to announce the war on coal is over.
Pence said the Trump administration believes American energy drives prosperity and jobs.
And we're going to continue to work with all of you and with these outstanding leaders who are gathered here to continue to drive the kind of policies that will develop a strong energy future in Crow Nation and for all of the United States of America.
Pence said the president has already taken executive action to try to help the coal industry. For National Native News, I'm Jackie Yamanaka in Billings, Montana.
The Cheyenne River Youth Project's Red Can Graffiti Jam Festival is among the finalists for this year's Robert E. Gard Award. The accolade is one of seven national honors offered by Americans for the Arts. The nonprofit regularly acknowledges organizations and individuals that cultivate, promote, sustain, and support the arts in the U.S. Jim Kent has the story.
The Red Can Graffiti Jam is the brainchild of the Cheyenne River Youth Project. Its purpose is to inspire the community, and especially the youth, by exposing it to the world of graffiti and street art. Youth Project Executive Director Julie Garrow explains.
We are in our third year, so on June 27th, about 12 artists will arrive from throughout the world who will spend 3 days painting in Eagle Butte and also in the Juanita Wawapi Art Park, which is an art space created by the Cheyenne River Youth Project.
The original plan for the Graffiti Jam was as a one-time event, but the gathering proved such a success and garnered such growing popularity nationwide that Garrow decided to host it again and again. And while the artist's work was originally limited to the art park, their canvas has expanded with time.
Within the community, we have buildings, and at first they were just kind of more the old dilapidated buildings that they were abandoned. And so we would paint on those, but as the people become really more engaged in the project, they're opening their buildings to us to paint.
The Red Can Graffiti Jam includes known street artists and graffiti writers painting alongside students from the Cheyenne River Youth Project. Americans for the Arts will announce the winner of its Robert E. Gard Award for exemplary work at the intersection of the arts and community life in June. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Support by Prairie Edge Trading Company, purveyors of traditional and contemporary Northern Plains Native American fine art, including buffalo skulls and robes, shields, weapons, clothing, music, and more at prairieedge.com. Open up. And by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller, and Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juneau afternoon here on Monday, May 15th, and in the studio now with me is Jeb Rault and Jimmy Sweetwater. They play blues, among other things. They're in town to be playing gigs for the next 2 weeks, focused mainly down at the Alaskan Bar. Jeb and Jimmy, welcome to the show, and welcome to Juneau.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah.
It's nice to have you here. You're both from New Orleans, is that right? Or that's where you're based these days?
Yeah, that's where I'm from. Yep. That's where we are.
I'm a Northern Florida boy, but I live there now.
Okay. If you had to, like, describe your style of music to our listeners, how would you do it?
Well, I would say it's pretty bluesy, huh, Jimmy?
Yeah.
Pretty bluesy. We put a little bit of some New Orleans funk into it, you know, a little funkiness.
Yeah.
But Jimmy sings some older blues tunes, some kind of funny ones, really.
Try to do
ones.
The B-side songs and a lot of the records, like, you know, Muddy Waters, all those records. He did so many songs that people never heard, so I try to go for the B-side, you know, to do.
Yeah.
You know, I'll do some Robert Johnson's tunes and also some older New Orleans stuff with a little bit of a dancing edge in there where you can kind of catch a groove.
That's right.
All right. And mostly guitar for you, Jeb?
Guitar and singing.
And Jimmy?
Play harmonica and sing. And on this record, that's what we play. But I've added my percussion board, which I've played all over the world. I'll be playing tonight. And this week.
Hey, let's play a cut for our listeners. This is one you recommended, I'll Believe I'll Go Back Home. You want to set it up for us?
It's a Greg Brown song. It's a great tune. I heard Greg Allman do it, so that's why I decided to do it.
Yeah, both of us singing on it, too. That's why I wanted to start with that.
All right, let's give a listen.
I believe I'll go back home. I believe I'll go back home. I believe I'll go back home. Acknowledge that I've done wrong. My father's kind of patient, as kind as he could be. He gave to me my portion that he had promised me. He yelled to his servants, bring the fat calf down. Rescue me, my poor son. You better come back to town. I believe I'll go back home. I believe I'll go back home. I believe I'll go back home. Now I said I don't want it.
Tell us about this album, Jimmy.
Yeah, well, me and Jeb have been playing together in New Orleans for a little under a year, and I decided we should go do this album. And found this guy named George Carrera Jr. out in Slidell at Sweet Mix Studios. My friend Robert Snow turned me on, and we went out there and we did this 8 songs and mixed it down, ready to press, in 8 hours.
Wow.
We didn't do any double takes of the songs. Maybe a couple times we did. We did them. I don't even remember. And we didn't do any overdubs. It was just very small. Very tiny things. So
what you're hearing is what we do live.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, and God bless George, man. He mixed it down. And when he mixed it down, which was the most interesting thing, he listened to it through, like, a little ghetto blaster, a little phone speaker, to get levels on all different things that you're going to listen to it. I'd never seen anybody do that before. I was like, man, pretty cool.
Bring it back up here for just a second.
All right.
So So you guys are going to be playing weekdays and weekend. You're busy.
I mean, every day, man. We came to town to play.
So during the day, tell us about your schedule, Jeb.
Yeah, so what, we're 4 to 7 in the weekdays. And then on Friday and Saturday night, we'll be 10 at night until 2 in the morning.
That's right. That's right.
At the Alaskan Hotel, so y'all come on out and hear us.
What brought you guys to Juneau?
Well, I've always wanted to come to Alaska for many, many years, and I was sitting in the living room, and my friend told me, she said, you should probably just try to play up there. So here we go. So I contacted Betty Adams at the hotel, and one thing led to another, and here we are playing for 2 weeks. I wanted to play for 2 weeks. I mean, I didn't want to just come up and play one night and leave.
Jimmy said, hey, Jeb, you want to go to Alaska and play some music? I've been to Alaska before, and I loved it, you know? And so I said, heck yeah. Yes, and we're happy to be here. You know, it's getting pretty hot back home in New Orleans right now. So it's nice to be here with the cool breezes.
Beautiful city. I'm liking it.
Well, you guys are going to have a lot of fun. I think the town's going to have a lot of fun. 2 weeks.
Yeah.
You're talking about, maybe networking with some local musicians as well.
Yeah. We'd love to. We'd love to have anybody who wants to come out and play
Come down, sit in with us. Yeah, we're ready to rock and roll, man. We'll play country. We'll do a jazz number if we have to, or we have to do.
Right, it's kind of like how we do it in New Orleans. You know, everybody sort of plays music with each other.
People show up and play.
Yeah, we're very open to that.
Yeah.
If people want to learn more about your sound, get your CD, where should they go?
They can go to www.RAULT, Sweetwater.com. You can contact me on the website if you want a CD, and I'll mail it to you. Or you can show up at the show and buy a CD. And we got a special deal right now. They're $15 each, but two for $40. So, I'm just trying to pass the savings along.
Very thoughtful of you.
Thank you.
Love it. Yep, absolutely. Let's see. What was I going to ask? Oh, we're going to go out on one called Move to the Outskirts of Town. You want to set this up for us?
Yeah, it's a song from 1937, a Casey Bill Wildham, Andy Razzaf number. They wrote a bunch of blues tunes back then, and it's a classic.
All right, Jeb Rault, Jimmy Sweetwater, they're at the Alaskan. Let's see, starting...
4 o'clock today.
O'clock today.
We'll be right over there.
And all those shows are free, but
come
you can
on,
always
man.
Buy a CD or tip your musicians.
Yeah, tip the musicians, bartender. Take advantage of that special deal that I just said.
The 2 for 40 or 1 for 15?
Yeah, I'm just saying.
Sounds good, guys. Anything else you want to add?
I appreciate it, Scott. Thanks for having us.
Anytime. Yeah, just good to be here in Juneau, and thanks a lot for having us on.
I'm gonna move way to the outskirts of town. Yeah, I'm gonna move way to the outskirts of town. It's a long way from here. I don't need no ice man. Buy me a Frigidaire. That's what I need. Yeah, I'm gonna move to the outskirts of town. Now it's a roll down, dirty, rotten shame. Every morning's the same. You got your baby daddy outside, tapping on that window pane. Man, I gotta move. Yeah, I'm gonna move to the outskirts of town. Seem kind of funny, you know, as funny as it can be. We're gonna have a house of kids, man, none of them look like me. Woo, I'm gonna move. Yeah, I'm gonna move to the outskirts of town.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, May 15th.
This is Bird Note. These rich, caroled phrases are among the best loved and most widely heard in North America. This superb song belongs to perhaps our most familiar bird, the American robin. As singers go, the robin is exceptional. They're often the first birds to sing in the morning, starting well before dawn, and the last you'll hear in the evening, holding forth into deep twilight. Robins also begin singing earlier in the year than most birds, often in midwinter. And robins can be remarkably long-winded. While their average song strings fewer than a dozen short phrases together and lasts a few seconds, robins sometimes sing for minutes without a pause. But the most extraordinary measure of robin song is its variety. In each song, a robin sings a varied selection from a repertoire of 10 to 20 different caroling phrases. Then as evening comes on, the same robin interweaves these phrases with exquisite whisper-like notes from its personal treasury of 75 to 100 different whispered notes. The potential song variety is amazing. The musical results, enchanting. Today's show brought to you by the Bobolink Foundation. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Healthy Smiles are here. On May 22nd, Search will open the doors to its updated and expanded Children's Dental Clinic. Staffed by board-certified pediatric dentists and outfitted with the latest in pediatric dental technology, the new clinic will provide your child with a lifetime of healthy smiles. All kids smiles welcome, from the first tooth to 17 years old. Call 789-KIDS to make an appointment for your child today. This message brought to you by Search.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on a beautiful Monday afternoon, the 15th of May, 2017. Scott Burton, your host. In the studio now are a couple master gardeners, Ed Byarski and Pat Hartman, and we're going to be talking about the Master Garden of Primula Tour and the Master Gardeners Association. Welcome to the show, Pat and Ed.
Thanks.
Thank you.
It's so nice to have you here. It's probably hard to get you both out of the garden on a day like this.
Right. The weeds are growing as we speak.
Ed, I think I saw some dirt on the hands still.
Oh, a little bit. Yeah, I didn't wash them in the drive over from Douglas.
Well, it's great to have you both here. Pat, should we start with you? Tell us a little bit about the Master Gardeners Association. Is that a good place to start?
That's a good place to start. So what you find here in Juneau is everybody belongs to a lot of the same gardening programs. So the Master Gardeners usually what's happened with them is they've done 30 hours of classroom, then 30 hours of community service after their classroom, so 60 hours total to get their Master Gardener certificate.
Okay.
And then we've got an association now, so what we're all about education, continuing education. So we've got programs going on year-round. Normally they're the second Saturday of each month. During the summer is kind of crazy. So what we're doing during the summer is we've got one of our members who's also on the board. I think, Ed, are you involved in those too? At the community
somewhat,
gardens.
Yes.
So the fourth Sunday afternoon at 2:00 in the afternoon, we're doing anybody who's interested, if you've got a problem out of your community garden or there's things that you want to know about what you need to do for various things, you can come on out at 2:00 on the Sunday afternoon on the fourth Sunday, and you can get some professional help there on that. So
and the other thing that's happening also is Master Gardeners have a couple of plots that we use for various experiments, and we've grown in the past all manner of things from herbs and iris and rhubarb and potatoes and carrots and beets and other assorted stuff. So that's something, and this year it's kale and collards, among other things. So folks can see they're supposed to be labeled, so people can see kind of a comparison and eventually hope to have a tasting different kinds of kale. We've done rhubarb tasting in the past and carrots and other assorted stuff too.
Okay. And this tour, the official tour, is on the 20th and 21st. Is that right?
Correct. This year we're doing two tours. So this is our spring tour, and it's all about primulas. So we're touring. We have potentially now 7 gardens on 2 days that we will be touring from 12 to 3. And then afterwards, we're on Sunday afternoon, we're going to do a potluck panel discussion, show flowers that aren't necessarily in bloom right now that will be blooming at later times in the year that do well and grow in Juneau. And that's going to be here at your three beautiful, gorgeous K2 360 room downstairs. So that will be really, really fun because we've never tied that in before that I know of while I've been here.
We haven't.
On the tour.
So this program, Sunday evening, will be presented by some of us primula growers and taking questions from the audience, of course, perhaps about what they've seen during the tour, but also everything from how to start primulas from seed to dividing, which will be time for soon. I was dividing them this morning. So, and long-term growing and just, some of the dozens to hundreds of varieties that are possible in Juneau, which is the primrose capital of Alaska.
I was going to ask you, what's special about the primula?
Our city fathers and mothers, with the encouragement of the Juneau Garden Club. Oh, we just did this last week, 2004, I think it was, or two, I think so. They declared that to be. So that's part of the connection. They do grow exceedingly well here. And out at the Jensen Olsen Arboretum is the National Collection of Primulas.
Okay. Something you said a few minutes ago, Ed, about your experimental plots. What surprised you most out of those in the last couple of years?
Some years it's, well, we always find that we need fertilizing. Fertility is essential. Good soil. And, of course, then the weather from one year to another, next adds to the experimental nature of these plots. So that makes a big difference. And, choosing varieties, we certainly find is important. And that's what we try to share. We publish the information we've gotten with the warning that other people's gardens are different. More sun, shade, drainage, and fertility type of soil. I mean, varies tremendously from Douglas to downtown Juneau to out the road where I live.
Sure. How would you two characterize this year so far in comparison to other years?
Cool and late.
Right.
I'd also say it was a colder winter. I have things that last year, no problem this year, that I'm wondering if they're coming back.
Last year was unusually warm, though. I was gardening the third week in January. There was no frost in the ground. Planted peas the last day of February. We're eating peas by now. This year I have peas that are a quarter inch tall in the same area. Planted early, not that early. I couldn't. The ground is frozen.
Yeah.
But we are eating, starting to eat kale and spinach from stuff I planted at the end of January when we had a brief thaw.
Mm. Some advice for our listeners. What are you telling people right now?
Get out there and weed is what I tell them.
Oh, yeah. Weeding. We're lucky that there's not too many slugs, unlike last year. And that may be partially the result of this harsher winter we just had. But, yeah, get out there, and if you haven't gotten your soil prepared, loosened up, fertilized, covered with clear plastic to help it warm up, should be doing this now so that we can start planting seeds and transplants.
And I bet people can ask a lot more questions this weekend. Pat, you want to outline again where to meet, when they start, all those details.
Sure. So Saturday, May 20th. The tour itself is from 12 to 3. You can go online right now and purchase tickets either at Hearthside. You can go to Hearthside Books or on Jack's site. And what happens is between 10:30 and 12:30, you go to either Safeway's parking lot where we'll have a booth. It'll say Master Gardeners on the sign. We have a sign, so look for that outside. If it's raining, we'll probably be inside at a table. And you can. What you do is you bring your receipt that you would get from when you purchase these tickets, and we're going to give you a map that then you can go tour the five gardens that are over in the Douglas area from 12 to 3, and then Sunday you would go to the gardens that we're going to have on Sunday, and that will also get you into the K2 360 room.
And that's from 5 to 7
That's
Sunday.
Actually from 5 to 7. And I believe, you know, from 4:30 on, you could come in, and we're setting up early, so there'll be people there from 4, but at 4:30, you could easily get into the room. Tickets are $30. What else? Oh, the proceeds this year. We're donating our proceeds this year to help out with the National Primrose Society. It's coming to town next May for 3 days, bringing in a great speaker, and we're going to donate our proceeds from this tour to help towards that.
And one more item, I think Pat just missed mentioning downtown as far as the where to get your maps. Also will be available on Saturday and Sunday downtown at the Jack. So there and at Car Safeway in the Valley, depending on which way you're coming from.
And you can purchase your tickets then too if you haven't gone online.
All right. If people want more info, where should they go?
They can email us at info@seak-mastergardeners.org.
Okay. Pat Hartman, Ed Byarski here in the studio, Studio A at K2 Studios in Juneau. Are we missing anything? Anything else you want to add?
There's a lot of primrose out there. Everybody here in town can grow some. Again, there's some for every location from wet, creeks, muskeg areas, on up through dry rock garden places, part shade, full sun, all of that. Everybody should be growing some.
And the other thing I'd ask, there's probably out there going, is this going to be their tour that they're doing? No, there is another tour in July. So come to this one, come support this one, see great flowers for spring, and then mark your calendars for July 22nd for the next one, which I'm sure will be back on the air.
Yeah, please do. All right, Ed and Pat, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, the 15th of May, 2017. Emily Dickinson died on this day, 1886, Amherst, Massachusetts, after a long illness during which she did not allow her doctor to come to her bedside, only to stand in the doorway. She was 56 years old. She had left specific instructions for her burial. Her casket was carried by the family's 6 Irish hired men past her flower garden, through the barn and back of the house, and through a field of buttercups to the cemetery. Only a few of her 1,800 poems had been published in her lifetime, those anonymously. Her Irish maid Maggie was aware of them, but her sister Lavinia was not, and when she discovered them, she decided not to burn them, as Emily had told her to do with all her papers. Lavinia burned the letters, but not the poems, and the first volume came out in 1890, severely edited to fit Victorian style. It was on this date in 1869, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, Susan B. Anthony, formed the National Woman Suffrage Association to agitate for the right to vote. They worked together for 50 years. Anthony never married. She was free to travel, devote her life to the movement. Stanton stayed home, raised her kids, did the research, and wrote the speeches that Anthony gave. It's the birthday of Lyman Frank Baum, born in Chittenango, New York, 1856, who gave us The Wonderful Wizard of Oz in 1900. A big success, so he went on to write 13 more novels about the land of Oz. It's the birthday of Catherine Ann Porter, born Indian Creek, Texas, 1890, author of Ship of Fools, Flowering Judas, and other stories, Pale Horse, Pale Rider. Catherine Ann Porter, who said, "I have a very firm belief that we are not masters of our fate. We don't direct our lives. There are so many things we are capable of that we could be or do, except that there may be one powerful motivating force that simply carries you along, and I think that was true of me." It was on this day in 1891 that Pope Leo XIII issued an official Catholic Church encyclical addressing labor issues. It was called Rerum Novarum, of New Things, and it was the original foundation of Catholic social teaching. He said in his letter that while the Church defends certain aspects of capitalism, including the right to private property, the free market cannot go unrestricted, that there is a moral obligation to pay a fair and a living wage. And he told employers not to look upon their workers as their bondsmen, that it was never okay to cut wages, and told them to be mindful that to exercise pressure upon the indigent and the destitute for the sake of monetary gain and to gather profit out of the need of another is condemned by all laws, human and divine. Here's a poem by Mary Oliver entitled This Morning. This morning the redbird's eggs have hatched, and already the chicks are chirping for food. They don't know where it's coming from, they just keep shouting, "More, more." As to anything else, they haven't had a single thought. Their eyes haven't yet opened. They know nothing about the sky that's waiting, or the thousands, the millions of trees. They don't even know they have wings. And just like that, like a simple neighborhood event, a miracle is taking place. This Morning by Mary Oliver, from her collection Felicity, published by Penguin Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Staples, with print and marketing solutions designed to promote businesses, including business cards, presentations, large banners and posters, printed in-store or ordered online. Learn more at Staples and Staples.com. Staples. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, May 15th, about 25 minutes until the top of the hour. And now in from the canvas is Dan Todd and Mercedes Munoz, and we're going to be talking about a collaboration between Reach and Perseverance Theater, a production this weekend. Welcome to the show, Dan and Mercedes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's nice to have you here. Dan, what's this production called?
It's called This Is Our Story. It kind of dives in about the retelling of certain stories or a general story that the individuals of our rehabilitation program choose to share. It can range from one specific story with lots of detail to a really broad general story about the individuals.
Okay, and five individuals will be telling stories, right? Yeah. How did this come to be?
It kind of works through Perseverance Theater. They have a contract that they need to fulfill and with the community, and they chose to work with the Canvas in that and help these individuals tell their stories and develop their stories.
Okay. And let's see. So tell me about the participants' names.
We have Niall Bo Johnson, Mr. Angel Hernandez, Tammy Birch, Melanie Olson, and Jeff Larrabee.
And then you worked with some folks at Perseverance, is that right?
Yeah, so we've been in collaboration with Perseverance Theater, specifically Tom Romanoff, James...
Sullivan?
Sullivan, yeah. And Enrique...
Bravo.
Bravo. Yeah. Bravo. Yeah.
Wow, what a project. And so we have these five individuals who want to tell their stories, working with these professional actors to help craft them and how they tell them. Tell us more about how that went.
It was a little challenging at first. We weren't really sure how to go about doing it. But as soon as we started talking to the individuals about what they wanted to share or what they wanted to talk about, the stories kind of just started developing to themselves. Some had a really clear understanding of what it is they wanted to talk about. Others weren't sure, so we had to create mind maps and kind of pull from those mind maps and find similarities or differences between the different subjects in the mind map and kind of developed it that way.
And before the show, you told me a sort of central theme did emerge. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so kind of last week we were doing our practice and our routine, and we were in the middle of one of the individual stories. I don't remember whose it was, but kind of Tom and I locked eyes while it was going on. I was with the individual on stage, and Tom was directing, and kind of locked eyes because the theme of airplanes kind of became prevalent within each person's story. So we thought about something to kind of mix that in, so it kind of pulled all the stories together really well. And we think it's going to be really successful in that sense.
Mercedes, have you seen any of the rehearsals or seen this develop?
Yes, they've been practicing in the gallery, so I get to see little tidbits every few days, and it's going to be really cool. The folks at the Perseverance Theater are so talented, and they've really been helping our artists formulate their stories and find out how to tell them in an intriguing way. And it's really neat to watch, and I think you definitely don't want to miss it. It's going to be a cool show.
And so two performances, right? Friday and Saturday, both at 6 p.m.?
Both at 6 p.m., yeah.
Pay as you can. At Perseverance.
At the Perseverance Theater, yes.
Wow, interesting. Looking forward to that. What else is going on at the Canvas, Mercedes?
So on Saturday, this coming Saturday, the 20th, we're going to be participating in the Community Day on campus out at the university. We're going to bring out a little sneak peek, a few of our wheels. So if you want to try out the wheel, we'll have a couple of those there. And we'll have information on all our summer classes, both kids' classes and adult classes. You can get some more information or sign up there if you want to. And we'll have some of our artists there as well, so you can ask them questions. Let's see what else. Yeah, we're working on more adult classes right now. We have a few up on the website and hoping to finalize a few more in the next couple weeks. And so we're really focusing on 1 to 2 day workshops. We understand that people's schedules are busy in the summer, and especially if the weather's nice out, you might not always want to commit to a 4-week class. So we hear that, and we're trying to make some shorter classes with quality instruction for our community.
Okay. Dan, getting back to the production for a minute, this is our story. What surprised you most as you've developed this show?
It's hilarious. Really, I wasn't sure if that, what kind of a show it would be, if it would be really dramatic or really serious or sad or such, but there is comedy involved, and it is very funny. individuals might not think it's funny, but I think the crowd will really, really enjoy it. Just some good storytelling is occurring here.
Okay. If people want more information about what's going on at the Canvas, where should they do that, Mercedes?
You can always check out our website, thecanvasarts.org, or come on into the Canvas. We have printed out schedules of our upcoming classes.
All right. Mercedes Munoz and Dan Todd in talking about happenings at the Canvas, including this weekend's production of This Is Our Story at Perseverance Theater, May 19th and 20th, Friday and Saturday, 6 p.m. pay-as-you-can showings. Thanks for coming on the show, you two. Anything else you'd like to add?
No, I don't think so. Thanks so much for having us.
Anytime.
Yeah,
thanks.
Thank you so much, Scott. Mm-hmm.
Written in these walls are the stories that I can't explain. I leave my heart open, but it stays right here empty for days. She told me in the morning she don't feel the same about us in her bones. Seems to me that when I die, these words will be written on my stone. I'll be gone, gone tonight. The ground beneath my feet is open wide. The way that I've been holding on too tight, with nothing in between. The story of my life, I take her home.
The story of my life.
Juno Dance Theater proudly presents their 2017 Spring Showcase Friday, May 26th at 7 p.m. and two shows on Saturday, May 27th at 2 p.m. and 7 p.m. All performances at the JDHS Auditorium. This year's showcase will feature excerpts from Swan Lake, A Midsummer Night's Dream, and George Balanchine's Tchaikovsky Pas de Deux. Tickets at junodance.org, The Jack, Hearthside Books, and At the Door for the Spring Showcase, May 26th and 27th. This message brought to you by Juno Dance Theater.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon on Monday, May 15th, 2017. Scott Burton, your host, 15 minutes until the top of the hour. In the studio now is the cast of Alice in Wonderland, Montessori Borealis' production of Alice in Wonderland, playing this Thursday and Friday. Everybody, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Thank you. Nice to have you.
Hello.
I have Rachel, Aubrey, Annika, Alexis, and Dominic, and they're here to tell us about the show. Rachel, are you Alice first act or second act?
I'm Alice in the first act.
Why don't we start there? Tell us about the show and how it came to be.
So every year in our AMP program, which is the Adolescent Montessori program, we do a play, and this year some of the kids were interested and performing Alice in Wonderland, so we found a script that worked for all 35 of us, and that's how it got started.
Okay. Aubrey, Tweedledee, right?
Yes.
And were you excited about this? Did you help choose this production?
No, I wasn't exactly too psyched about it, except I'm fine with it, so. Yeah. And we do have 35 kids, except there were a little more characters, so some characters play two acts.
Okay.
Yes.
And tell us about Tweedledee.
Tweedledee is like brothers with another character, Tweedledum, which is kind of like spoiled brats. Yeah.
Okay. Annika, who
so
do you play?
I'm Alice in Act 2, and I feel like Alice is kind of a snooty character in this play. She doesn't know very much, so.
Does she learn anything by the end?
No, but if you disrespect people, they don't like you very much, so.
Okay. Have you learned anything by playing Alice?
I don't know. I've learned that, I don't know.
Well, think on it. I might ask you again at the end of the interview, okay? And Alexis, you're the narrator.
Yes, I'm the narrator in Act 2.
Okay. And tell us what that's been like.
It's fun. It's definitely, I've done many plays. It's definitely one of the bigger parts I've ever had, and it's exciting.
How's the language in the play? Like, this, Lewis Carroll wrote this, right?
Mm-hmm.
A long time ago.
We are doing an adaptation by Michelle Vaca.
Yeah, it's like.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's pretty good, I guess.
All right.
Explain it.
Rachel, what's been the most challenging part of this play, would you say?
Probably having everybody rehearse at the same time and having everybody there, everybody on cue, and the script's kind of confusing. It's kind of weird and out of the ordinary. So, like, fixing things and making sure everything works has been the hardest part.
How about for you, Aubrey?
I agree with Rachel. Like, remembering your cues and stuff like that can be kind of challenging sometimes.
Okay. Annika?
I think the hardest part is it's kind of random. Like, there's a lot of stuff that happens at the same time. So just, like, keeping track of where you are and, knowing who's going to say, like, the same line again and stuff.
How about you, Alexis?
I'm not quite sure. I think it's just trying to get everyone on the same page and trying to get everyone to listen. Since I've done many plays before, it's difficult for just sitting there and waiting for a long time. But it's pretty fun.
As the narrator, do you have to memorize all your lines, or are you off stage reading them?
I have to memorize all my lines, and I'm on stage.
Wow.
The whole time. I don't go off.
Rachel, Alice, one, going back to you for a sec, what's been the takeaway for you with this play? What do you think Lewis Carroll was trying to communicate?
I think he was, like, I read up on it a bit, and mostly he wanted to create a story that was entertaining, and it was fun to listen to, and he based it off of a real girl, supposedly, named Alice Little, And, yeah, he wanted to create a story that others could listen to and enjoy.
How about for you, Aubrey?
I did not know that. That's new news to me. But, yeah, that's really all I have to say on this topic.
All right. Annika, how about you?
I think that, wait, what was the question?
Just sort of, what do you think, why did Lewis Carroll write this, or what was he sort of trying to communicate with it?
Well, I think that, like, Alice kind of, you can't really tell if she's imagining all this stuff or if it's actually real, and I think it's really interesting how, like, there's so many different things that happen that are all, like, weird and different in their own way. It's really interesting.
Alexis, anything to add?
I think he really just wanted to make the thing a mystery to see if they, if Alice was in Wonderland or not, and I love that.
Dominic, have you had a chance to see them rehearse for this play? What have been some of your observations?
Yeah, so I've essentially been directing the play, and so I've been there for all of the rehearsals. We tend to split it up, so Act 1 rehearses at once, and then Act 2 rehearses later separately. And it's been an interesting experience. I've done a little work with plays before, never directing, and not with middle school. And it's been pretty fun, and it's interesting to see how much energy the kids can bring to the script.
Okay. Who wants to give me the details on when and where we can all see the play?
I will. So our play is on May 18th and 19th. It starts at 5:30, and it's in the Marie Drake Gym, which is downtown next to Harborview. And so it's $7 if you buy a ticket in advance from an AMP student like us, or it's $10 at the door. If you have a family of five, you get a discount of $35. And it's to fundraise for our Spring Odyssey.
Which is what?
Our Spring Odyssey, maybe my classmates will help me out, is a trip that we do at the end of the year.
Yeah, the Spring Odyssey is something that we raise money for all year. We started out with baking bread and selling that, and also making jam. And this year we're going to Skagway, which we voted on. And yeah, Annika?
It's a community, like, we all get together and go to Skagway, and it kind of helps make our community at AMP, and we all raise money for it, and so, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Just something fun, and I love it, and it's great.
And we all do community service there in Skagway. Mm-hmm. So as the community has given us money through our fundraising efforts, we give back to the community of Skagway by doing service projects.
Okay. This play is this Thursday and Friday, is that right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
5:30 at the Marie Drake Gym.
Yep.
Which is sort of by the soccer field in between the high school and the elementary school, Harborview, across from the cemetery.
Uh-huh.
Is that how you describe it?
Yeah.
By the planetarium. Yeah.
Okay.
In the same building.
5:30 p.m. It's a fundraiser for the Odyssey, the Spring Odyssey, Montessori Borealis. Alice in Wonderland sounds like a lot of fun. Anything else anyone would like to add?
No.
I think
can't think of anything.
Okay.
Just hope you come.
Please come.
We'll see you this Thursday, 5:30, or Friday at 5:30. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
In Wonderland, how do you get to Wonderland? Over the hill or underland, or just behind the tree? When clouds go rolling by, they roll away and leave the sky. Where is the land beyond?
go? Where is the crescent moon? They must be somewhere in the sunny
to a Juno afternoon. On tomorrow's show, Lori Scandling will be your host, and she'll learn about Community Day on campus. Members of Axiom Brass will be here to highlight their Juno Jazz and Classics Festival performances. We'll hear about the upcoming afternoon of Ave Maria's, and Julie Diane from the Juno Dance Theater will be here with details about their spring showcase. Taking a look at the weather, 59 degrees at the Juno International Airport, and the forecast for tonight calls for mostly clear skies with a low around 40 degrees. Tomorrow calls for partly sunny skies with a high near 58. And Thursday, still partly sunny with a high near 52. And the first call for precip doesn't come until Thursday night with a chance of rain. And on Friday, rain is likely, mainly after 10 a.m. Thanks for tuning in to a Juno afternoon.